A very good day and welcome to the Adoris Phase 2 information call. During the presentation, lines will be on listen only. If you need assistance, star zero, coordinator will be happy to assist. There will also be a Q&A session towards the end of the presentation. I'd also like to advise all parties the conference is being recorded. Now I'd like to hand over to your host for today, Simon Masters. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mark. Good evening, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we're sorry we're unable to meet you face-to-face indoors due to the current pandemic. The purpose of tonight's call is to explain our plans for the next section of the Adoris seawall between Coast Guard and Colonnade breakwaters. Network Rail Senior Program Manager Dave Lovell and Senior Commercial Scheme Sponsor Julie Gregory will talk you through the proposals. This will take around 15-20 minutes, and then the rest of the call until 7 p.m. will be over to you for any questions. As we have a limited amount of time, I would kindly ask that you keep your questions this evening to the Coast Guard's to Colonnade proposals. We're also joined on the call by additional members of the program and representatives from our consultants at Arup and Mott MacDonald, who will be on hand to answer any questions. With me, I have Susie Tilsley, Commercial Scheme Sponsor for Network Rail, Colin Field, Town Planner for Network Rail, Phil Morton, Project Manager for Network Rail, Nick Clark from Mott MacDonald, and Rob Snell from Arup. If we don't get time to answer your questions this evening, please do email us at southwestrrp@networkrail.co.uk or via our Facebook account, which is @southwestrrp. That's Southwest Romeo Romeo Papa. I'm now going to hand over to Julie to talk you through the background to our proposals.
Thank you, Simon. Good evening, everyone. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background to the Adoris seawall project. As I'm sure anyone local is aware, we've been working on improving the resilience of the stretch of railway that runs through Dawlish for some time now. Back in 2014, storm damage to the railway here was so severe we had to close the line for 8 weeks to make repairs. This cut Devon and Cornwall off from the rest of the UK by rail, and the cost to the economy ran into millions. Since then, we've been working with world experts to look at ways of protecting the railway, and indeed the town, from the worst of the weather. With sea levels rising, it was clear that doing nothing was not an option, as flooding of the tracks frequently causes line closures and disruptions, as well as causing some pretty unpleasant conditions for residents of and visitors to Dawlish getting on and off trains during stormy conditions. After we'd considered a number of potential options, the government announced £80 million of funding for a new seawall for Dawlish back in February last year, and in the summer we started work on the first section, which runs along the Marine Parade. We're making good progress and plan to finish this summer. If you have seen parts of the wall where the recurve panels have been installed on top, you'll know that these are already doing their job, returning the waves to the sea. It's our task now to complete that £80 million project by building the next section of the wall from Coast Guards to Colonnade breakwaters. Next week, we'll be submitting our detailed plans to Cambridge District Council, seeking prior approval for the work. We're also applying for listed building consent because the work affects Dawlish Station, which is Grade 2 listed. If we receive consent, we are looking to start work in the autumn, and it's likely to take 2 years to construct. I'm now going to hand you over to Dave Lovell, our Senior Programme Manager, to explain what the proposals involve. Over to you, Dave.
Thank you, Julie. Good evening, everybody. As Julie said, we've been working with leading experts in the field to find the best solution for Dawlish. There are a number of varied engineering challenges along this 415-metre stretch, including the station building, the spilling basin, which is where Dawlish water runs out into the sea, and the actual town gateway around its Colonnade underbridge area. We undertook a full option selection process which considered a number of potential solutions. These included combinations of offshore breakwaters, a revetment, which is a sloping structure built up against a what would it be the seawall, a raised seawall with a high level promenade, and a raised seawall with a lower promenade. We then went through our option selection process, and we honed that those options down to two options. So it was the seawall with a high-level promenade and a seawall with a low-level promenade. We then took those two designs through a scaled model to look at how they'd actually operate. So we went to HR Wineford and got them to test the model of those designs with a 3D simulation of the waves. From this testing, it was clear that the high-level seawall incorporating a wider, safer promenade would provide the resilience you need, plus improved amenities for local people and passengers. For instance, it gave us the opportunity to build into this design a access for all lift bridge. The new taller seawall will add 4.2 metres to the height of the current the low-level promenade, and its total extend, on average, 2.8 metres further out towards the sea. The wall includes a recurve at the top, as at Marine Parade, to help deflect the waves and reduce the amount of water coming over the top of the track. So to put that into context, whereas the current promenade is underneath the overhanging timber platform at the station, the new promenade will be approximately the same height as the railway platforms. It will be wider than the current promenade, it will vary from 3 or 4 metres, and it will provide more spacious, safer, level service users, especially users, wheelchair users, and families with pushchairs. Anyone walking along, it will be protected by a curved parapet on the wall, which is part of the actual height. That parapet is 1.1 metres high, which is the waist height of an average adult. This 1.1 metre forms part of this overall seawall height. And on this section, there will be a number of raised points where benches along the promenade will allow people to enjoy the views as we reduce the parapet height to 0.8 metres with a small railing on top. As well as building new wall and promenade, we plan to reconstruct the timber seaward platform at Dawlish Station, which has to be repaired several times over the years, build a new accessible station footbridge with lifts, provide pedestrians ramp access to the beach and the promenade, and build a new footbridge to link sections 1 and 2 of the seawall, which will run parallel to Colonnade Viaduct. We also intend to rebuild the boundary wall of Dawlish Water Skinning Basin to make it much stronger. This will take energy, or some of the energy, out of the waves, and this will help reduce the amount of beach material that gets deposited under the viaduct. As part of the scheme, we will need to demolish Coast Guard's boathouse to enable us to build a new seawall high enough to achieve the resilience we need. A footprint will be left to show where the building stood, and we plan to reuse some of the stone to build public benches within the project. We'll also need to adjust the bottom section of the existing footbridge at this location to tie into the new seawall. So that's what we're planning to build, and in some ways it would be very similar to the operation at Marine Parade. For example, at Marine Parade we'll build section 2 new seawall around the existing structure, then the gap between the old and new will be infilled. However, there are actually some differences in the methodology for the second phase against the phase 1 at Marine Parade. This is due to the sand depths and bedrock levels have got significantly different in this section, and the foundation of the new seawall will need to be installed by a method known as piling. This involves inserting a cylindrical steel pile deep into the ground using heavy machinery. So you may have noticed, certainly last month, so early part of May, that we were working in a station car park. And that's where we've been doing trials to actually ascertain where the bedrock levels are, and so that we can establish the method of piling we need to use. The piling activity is likely to create some noise. It's not actually the noisiest type of piling, but it will cause some destruction. So that we can get the work done quickly as possible, we're working around the clock over a period of approximately 3 months for that particular activity, which we will, of course, write to residents, allowing them plenty of notice of when that work is going to take place. To do that piling work, we're planning on bringing a jack-up barge onto the beach, very similar to the one used in 2014 for the seawall repairs. And this will be used as a main construction platform for the works. This will mean we can carry on working without being limited to the tides, whether it's on the first phase in Marie Craig, we have had to work around the tide times. I'm going to hand you back now to Julie, who will talk a little bit further about the benefits of the proposal, and then we'll go to your questions.
Thank you, Dave. I'd just like to sum up the benefits that completing the seawall project will bring not only to the railway and our passengers, but for the people of Dawlish. So we've talked about how protecting the railway from the sea will lead to less disruption and fewer line closures. While we won't be able to stop the railway here from closing completely, improved resilience will enable a quicker recovery after large storm events. As well as that, passengers getting on and off trains during high tides and stormy weather will have a better experience and less chance of being hit by waves or spray while standing on the platform. The new station footbridge with lifts will make it easier for people with disabilities or pushchairs or heavy luggage and hopefully attract more people to visit Dawlish. There will be a huge improvement in safety as we'll be able to remove what's known as a barrow crossing, which is currently used for escorting passengers with disabilities over the tracks. Also, at the station, the new seawall will offer more protection to the station building itself, and that means that potentially more of the building could be brought back into use. There will be benefits too for people who like to walk along the promenade. The new seawall will protect the high-level walkway from being inundated with material from the beach. It will also be cleaner because we'll be removing the pigeon roosts, and this will lead to an improvement in water quality too. There'll be opportunities to provide more seating, and overall it will be a much more accessible and safer space for people of all ages and abilities to enjoy. And it will help to preserve the coastal path for future generations. Finally, I'd like to say a word about how the project supports the local economy. By the time we finish work on Marine Parade, we will have spent nearly £5 million on local labour, materials and accommodation, and we would expect to spend a similar amount locally on the remaining section. I'm now going to hand you back to Mark, who will explain how you can ask questions, and as Simon said earlier, as we're limited for time, we kindly ask that we stick to the Dawlish seawall proposals for this call. Thank you.
We have two telephone questions. The first question comes from the line of
Nigel Tancock.
Please go ahead, you're live in the call.
Hi there, I have two questions really. Question one relates to the picture you've got of section two of the seawall, which shows it seems to have some sandstone cladding on the side of it. I'm wondering if this is true, if it is the case, if it has a cladding on it, because I know that the existing seawall has some quite unsightly algae growing on it on your new seawall on the main parade side. That's my first question, is the cladding on it? And my second question relates to the Stilling Basin. Basically, we're all concerned about rising sea levels, and I think the plan was to be able to 1 meter rising sea levels. I have concerns about flooding under the viaducts. Currently, we have previously had flooding of sort of green area of Dawlish following extreme sea weather. And I was wondering if there is any design within the Stilling Basin to mitigate the risk of flooding through seawater ingress under the viaduct.
Thanks, Nigel, for your questions. So firstly, you say the first question was about cladding on the second section of seawall and some algae growing on the first phase. So, yes, there is some algae growing on the panels on the first phase. Partly that is due to the texture that we have had to put on the seawall following a planning condition. On the second phase, there is a similar kind of texture on the concrete. There will be concrete blocks. It's not cladding. It might look like cladding, but it's more like concrete blocks. With regards to the Stilling Basin, if I can ask Nick Clark, our technical advisor, coastal advisor, to answer that one.
Yeah. So the design on the Stilling Basin has been looked at in combination with the Environment Agency, and actually it's the Environment Agency have responsibility for flood duties within Dorlis. Now, whilst the Network Rail scheme isn't predominant is focused on the resilience to the railway, we are working with the Environment Agency, who are developing a solution to look at both seaward flooding and what happens to Dorlis water as it kind of backs up and flows down through. What we have included as part of the scheme is you'll be aware that there's a single culvert that the Dorlis water flows out through. We will essentially be providing a doubled capacity to that culvert or something similar to that. But that will only come in use once the Environment Agency have completed all their modelling around how they are dealing with flows down from all this water. So whilst the scheme doesn't specifically address that, we are working with the Environment Agency to make sure that there's some joined up thinking about what is going on there and how they deal with sea level rise in under that and the potential flooding.
Okay, can I come back on the first answer about the cladding? Because on the brochure you sent us, there's a four-page glossy thing, plans for completion of 18 million seawall. On the photo on the top of page 2, it's got a nice sandstone finish that looks like it's in 1 meter squares. Now you're saying that's a bit of artistic license. It's actually the same grey concrete we have on phase one, or section one.
So Phil, can you answer that in more detail? So Phil Morton's the project manager for the scheme. So if it's actually the seawall, Phil, if you can pick that up, please.
Yeah, so just to say what the main difference between the reprise scheme on phase one and what we're delivering on phase two. We touched on it earlier on with the type of foundation we're going for and how the construction is slightly different between the two. So on Marine Parade, we had an in-situ foundation dug with a large 5 metre high, 2 metre wide facing panel, precast facing panel, which was brought in, which you can see it's got the algae growing on. With the phase two, because of that, the strength of the rock is there and the depth of it and the level, we're actually going to obviously go to be going down the piling route. And what we're going to actually do is, I wouldn't call it cladding, but there will be a block finish which is strapped to the front of those piles. And then, so that you may call it artistic license. So the sizes of those panels need to be verified during the next phase of design. But all intents and purposes, yes, it will be a large panel strapped to the front of those piles, which will be taken up with the same surface texture as what we've got on Marine Parade.
And the same colour, isn't it?
The likelihood it will be the same colour, yes. But that, as Dave mentioned earlier on, that was down to a planning condition as well. So we have to agree that post the works and post our application for planning and prior approval, and we actually agreed that colour post that submission. And the likelihood is it would be consistent throughout the two sections.
All right, so the algae is quite unsightly.
So it's Colin Fielding. I'm the town planning manager. Nigel, I just thought it might be useful to make the point here. So one of the challenges we've had on this project is actually we need to deal with an organisation called Natural England. So Natural England's remit is all about the natural environment, biodiversity, habitats, and one of their requirements for the project is that the seawall front should be textured to encourage such growth on the seawall as part of the natural environment. So we've got a real fine balance here between keeping the biodiversity and keeping Environment Agency and Natural England happy about what their requirements are, as well as those of...
It's a fine balance. Unsightly algae growing quite high up, half the height of the sea wall.
So that's a natural process of onto the, whatever.
We didn't have it on the old sea wall. Okay, thanks for your answers. I'll obviously put it in writing, but I mean, as I said, the old seawall looks quite an attractive structure. If you look at the glossy picture on your page 2, again, it looks an attractive structure. But the reality is, when you see it being built, it's actually a very unsightly structure.
So thanks for your question, Nigel. I mean, the pictures do represent what we will actually build, and obviously. We are
not sure this is a great concrete wall half covered with algae, are you?
We are expected to comply with other government agencies, as my colleague Colin did suggest.
So. It isn't going to help the image of the town of England, an unsightly grey seawall half covered in algae, but hey ho. Okay, thank you for your help.
Thank you, Nigel.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of
Ed Fuller.
Ed, please go ahead. You're live in the call.
Hello, good evening there. I really appreciate you've done an awful lot of work with you of all the hard landscaping. I'm particularly looking forward to having a lift in Dawlish. It's going to make everyone's life a lot easier. So, as I said, I've kind of got two questions. First one's regarding potential soft landscaping. I appreciate, obviously, Network Rail is very concerned with, obviously, the railway track and protecting it. But I see that with the work that's going on in the first section outside Marine Parade, that a lot of sand is being lost when they plant a pumping of the foundations. And I did speak to one or two people at various other meetings, that there was a plan to restore the beach to how it was, and I was told that there was no plans for recharging the beach. Now, I appreciate it's quite an expensive process, but as we can appreciate, the sand would deflect an awful lot of wave energy before it get there, and I think we'll find that once the work on Marine Parade's been done, is that there's going to be a lot less beach than there has been. And I fear that with this section, there's going to be even less beach left. And if part of the process is to help Dawlish, attract people here and welcome them, surely having a beach that might be accessible, and I appreciate, obviously, you've got a ramp down to it, but there's not much sand there. There might not be much option to go at anything apart from ultra low tide. So that's the first question. And second question is regarding the beautiful stone building that was the old lifeboat station. Now, I appreciate, obviously, the roof's coming in and the water's going to get into the stonework and the mortar's going to get loose. I was wondering I think I read somewhere that the potential plan is that it's going to get demolished and some of the stone reused. I was wondering whether there was any scope for something of the lines that the roof is removed and it is added so that the walls would be able to remain intact. I'm not sure how, because the information in the leaflet doesn't really show enough of the schematic layout about whether it's going to be lost under concrete or not. And if it was to be lost under concrete, is there anything that could be done? Because there's a lot of beautiful brick arches in it. And I think one of the things that makes this part of Devon so wonderful is that the geology changes so much from bay to bay. And so we've got an awful lot of wonderful stone from all around Devon in it. And yeah, it's a beautiful bit of stonework. It'd just be a shame to see it kind of, you know, getting piled up somewhere and then lost. So yeah, wondering what the thoughts are on that. Those two questions. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Ed, for those questions. So I'll give you a brief answer, and then I'll refer to a couple of my colleagues on one or two. So with regards to recharging the battery, recharging the beach post the works, excuse me, we fully expect to have a planning condition from Tintbridge District Council and a condition from the Marine Management Organisation that we monitor the beach levels post the works. So if we look at the conditions that placed on us for the first phase, we need to monitor beach levels for the 5 years after the works are complete to make sure that there's no additional loss of beach from the works that we're planning. So I think that's a good thing. And we fully expect that that will be a condition, and we'll discharge that condition for the 5 years post the implementation of this second phase of works. With looking at the Coast Guard's building, yes, we all fully agree with your sentiments on you know, what a fantastic piece of work and craftsmanship that's gone into building that. And we have had various discussions with Heritage England and various other bodies to see what we can do. and if I pass you to Colin Field, our town planner, he can talk a little bit more in detail in that. That's okay, Colin?
Okay, thanks, Dave. So, Ed, essentially what's going to happen at that end of the seawall, at the Coast Guard's end, because the new seawall is increasing quite significantly in height, for the new high-level promenade to go all the way along, we could leave the building there. But if we left the building there, the only part that would be left sticking above ground level would be the pitch of the roof. And unfortunately, the pitch of the roof is actually probably the part of the building which is in the worst condition. And as you know, we've had problems recently where tiles have been... well, I don't know if you do know, but
well, I certainly do know. Yeah, it's been an absolute disaster. Yeah,
and we've now taken ownership of the building because of our concerns about safety of the building, and because we need to adapt it as part of the scheme. So, as part of the project design, because of the way that the new seawall will increase in height to give us more resilience of the railway, as I said, it would just be the top of the building that would now be sticking up at level, which is going to look a little bit silly. So the rear elevation of the building is actually a retaining wall that actually holds up the railway. So that will stay. That will stay in situ. But the front elevations and the side elevations, that will be taken down, carefully taken down, and the stone is going to be reused to create new benches along the seafront. So we can reuse that granite into the scheme as part of some bespoke benches along the scheme. And also what we're going to do is on the surfacing of the promenade surface where the building is we're going to be using stone to outlay which was the footprint of the building. So we will try and, so people will be able to say, well, what was the history? What was here? The building's going to go. It needs to go to deliver coastal resilience. But there will be some a nod to the fact that there was a building there. We're also going to incorporate some heritage information boards along the seawall, and that'll be included as part of the scheme. So, does that answer the question, Ed?
A little bit, yeah. I suppose that obviously, I'd imagine you'd be using the big chunky bit of the base for, the benches, as it were. It's just also you've got a triple arch going on there. I know it would probably require, having someone to kind of...
So one thing we did think about is could we take it down and put it up somewhere else? that was one of the considerations we looked at. Could we take it down stone by stone and move it somewhere else, move it to a heritage railway or something like that? But because of the rear elevation of the building is the retaining wall for the railway, you wouldn't be able to take the whole structure down to reconstruct it, if that makes sense.
I completely understand that. Now, I was just wondering One thing that we have done,
obviously it's not listed, but it's in the conservation area. As part of the project, we've had heritage consultants who have been down, luckily just before the COVID lockdown, and have done historical recording of all the structures. So we're in dialogue with Devon County Council's archaeologists. We've agreed a scheme of recording. All of that's been done. We've had the final version of the reports today. They're going to be going up on our website. They'll probably be up there next week, and it will form part of the submission.
Out of interest, if obviously part of the plan is to employ local people and local trade, etc. I'm not a stonemason. I'm not scouting for the work, but one thing, if there was a way of not obviously rebuilding it as such is, but saving some of the arches, could you incorporate having a kind of sheltered seating area, whether something that doesn't have a roof or potentially just for the wind, something where you can actually you've got three sides of a building, and someone with some skill could easily recreate something that would make it a lot more characterful than a lot of precast concrete. It might soften it somewhat.
Yes. Yeah. So if I can come in there, Ed. If we submit this as a planning application, and there could quite well be a planning condition placed on the project to say that you do need to replicate or move that building. We've worked with everyone to try and come up with the best solution at the moment, but that could be a condition. And that's a really good suggestion, and I think we can take that on board. And if it is something that we can do, then it's something that we should do to try and retain some of the heritage of that building and what it was actually built for.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd be a shame just to lose, because obviously there's been a lot of stone that's actually been taken from another beach that's been found its way somewhere else. That is what makes this area so beautiful, the different types of stone from the different quarries that are dotted around. And it's just like that is an intact thing at the moment. I'm pretty sure it's got a retaining wall thing, but obviously that's beautiful.
Absolutely.
One of the advantages of having by actually losing the building in that area, it's the connection with the next section of seawall, and it gives us this ability to have a really nice seating area. What we're trying to do is, yes, there will be some loss of some historic fabric, but what we're trying to do is offset that by providing some public benefit. So, the promenade will be able to be used pretty much 24/7. There'll be areas of seating. We're trying to give something back from.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
The loss of any historic.
Can I just interrupt? Sorry. Thanks. Good questions, Ed. If there's any more questions, maybe we can come back to you if you've got any other questions.
Yeah, I appreciate you talked briefly about the beach. I was just wondering, there's another kind of slight follow-up to that. But I appreciate there might be other questions, so I'm happy if you can come back to me, that's great.
That would be great. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, Ed. We do have one further question. Ed, if you do wish to ask another question, if you just do the same process as you did before. But the next question in the queue comes from the line of?
Bob Vickery.
Bob, please go ahead. You're live in the call.
Thank you very much. Some of you experts speaking will know that I've been part of the stakeholder liaison group involved in looking at the options and coming forward with occasional comments. As an architect, my comments have always been around the matters of materials and anything else I might have observed. One thing that your first questioner was asking was about the appearance of panels, and I wanted to ask a question about these two lift structures that are going to be constructed on the platform. They could just be in situ concrete towers, but it does seem to me that there's the possibility there of introducing decorative elements which tell something of the story of Dawlish Station. And as an example, I would question whether the original atmospheric pumping house that was located just at the back of the station yard might be modelled in shallow relief in the concrete shuttering, such that people standing on the platform or going towards the lift structure could then see something which relates to Dawlish in the past. Now, I'm not one for going all sort of cosily historical about things, but I think there are some factors around the railway which I happened to explore in 2006 when we had the Brunel bicentenary, and I put together a project with seven history panels between Dawlish Warren and Coryton Beach, which tell various aspects of the story. So my question really is, can some thought be given to making these two concrete towers for the lifts visually a little more interesting without adding whimsy to them?
Bob, it's Colin Field here. Do you mind if I go on to you on that one? So the towers themselves aren't going to be concrete finish on the outside. They're going to have a what you call a GRC, so a glass reinforced concrete. So it's not and there'll be panels, and they will be textured, and the architect's design at the moment has a slightly different design on the top than it has on the bottom. But if the feeling is so that's the type of detail that would normally be, you know, a sample of that would normally be required as discharging of the planning consent and listed building consent. So if there is the ability to do something else, I mean, the architects have proposed a finish on at the moment, but there certainly can be flexibility in what that finish looks like. However, one of the things that's been suggested elsewhere further down on one of the front panels is some sort of finish, maybe the atmospheric pump house, actually in the concrete shuttering on some of the lower levels of the seawall down by the distilling basin in some of the images we've done.
Okay, so that, so long as that isn't going to be eroded by the action of the sea to any great extent.
Yeah, because that's on the bit coming back. But you know, if we can quite easily, you know, ask the architects to look at other options of what that finish could be on the towers. That's one of the great things about using a modern material. So yes, we can certainly, this is a good idea, and we can certainly look at that as to whether or not, you know, we could incorporate a picture of some building or something that's relevant just to Dawlish.
It's just that at the moment, the illustration on page 3 of the leaflet we all received suggests two rather formidable concrete structures, and maybe if one was to get in closer and see that there's a lot more visual interest in the surface of those structures, my comment wouldn't be necessarily relevant. The other thing I would like to just cast a comment on was Ed Fuller was talking about the loss of sand on the beach. I've lived in Dawlish for 20 years, which is not nearly as long as a lot of people, but being a regular visitor to the beach, I've been surprised at the way the profile of the beach changes quite radically with the tides and the movement of coastal currents, so that you can go down one day and you can step off the end of one of these concrete ramps onto soft sand, and the next day you go down and you find that the sand is 2 feet further below you. So my question really is it not more important to restore the groins that traditionally slow down the movement of coastal sand than it is to be talking about recharging the beach? Because we had this example at Dawlish Warren a couple of years ago where an offshore sandbank was pumped onto the beach at Dawlish Warren. And in this last winter, all of that sand has disappeared. Whether it goes to Exmouth or whether it goes back into the sea to restore the sandbank, we don't know. But the action of coastal currents and of...
That's a really, really, really good question, Bob. And a lot of us in the project team were actually talking about that just earlier today. If I can ask Nick Clark, our coastal specialist, to talk a little bit more in detail about that. Hopefully he should be able to explain the workings of the tide and how things operate.
Yes. Thank you.
So the design, you know, the design of the seawall is designed such that we don't actually rely on beach levels in front of the structure, either for its structural integrity or for its overtopping performance. The reason we do that is because we know just how variable the beach levels can be along the frontage there.
Yeah.
In terms of the effectiveness of the groins, the groins are only really effective, require two things to be effective. The structures, the groin structures themselves need to be in good condition, I think, but you also actually need to have enough material to fill the groin bays. Now, over the years, since there are Google images available, you can have a look back into the 1940s and that, you can see those groins were very, very effective because they were very, very full. We could reinstate the groins, but actually what the coastal morphology has shown is they're not very effective because there actually isn't enough beach material existing within Dawlish for it to remain, for them to remain fully effective. We are as was mentioned earlier, we are though required, it was certainly a condition on Marine Parade and is likely to be a condition on Colonnade Coast Guard, that we will need to monitor beach levels and in doing so, we can monitor the variability. Once the wall is constructed, we would then be able to have a look at seeing if there is any benefit in either reinstating the groins to the full function, or whether the beach actually is quite happy to move around between the two breakwaters that exist. So It's not something that we're committing to doing at the moment. We don't need it for the resilience, but it is something that in the future, you know, is something that may be looked at to help stabilise the beach if required.
I can accept the notion of stabilising things because from where I live, I can see how the sand gets churned up and absorbed by the sea every day from your excavators and other tracked vehicles, and there are great areas of red seawater just off the end of the beach. The other thing I would just remind you of, I'm sure you're fully aware of, is that the texture of the sand and the colour of the sand on the Dawlish beaches is quite different from that of the other side of the estuary in Exmouth, where it's finer and yellower, or in Tynmouth, where it's coarser and perhaps the colour's nearer to the Dawlish colour. But obviously it's the Dawlish beaches and the profile of the seabed as it runs out from the seawall is very, very shallow, and it's one of the nice qualities of Dawlish that when the tide is really out a long way, you have an enormous length of beach available, and it's also very safe bathing for families when it's the tide is starting to come in and you can still stand on it, seabed, quite some distance out. Yeah. So I welcome the fact you're going to keep on studying it, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Thanks, Bob. But just before you move on to any further questions, if I could just touch back on your first question, I can assure you that with regards to heritage and making this scheme as visually perfect as possible, that the whole of the project team are really passionate that we leave a legacy with, you know, this project. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity to provide Dawlish with an access for all bridge with lifts, and all the team are really, really passionate to make sure that we leave Dawlish with something to be proud of.
Thank you very much, and I'm pleased to see that on Facebook there are so many people who support your scheme as you've presently illustrated it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. Your final question goes to Ed. Ed, please go ahead. You're live in the call.
Hi there. Yes, I suppose Bob did mention about the groins. Obviously, I suppose, I imagine, obviously, you know, the expense and you've got, you know, the potential conditions of a five-year study plan or monitoring the beach. Could one argue that the legacy of inheriting such the railway has actually had detracted from the beach material over the ownership of Network Rail, and so are we now in that situation where it's been left so long that you know there is so little beach material because of the work that went on, obviously, you know, by Brudenell. So whether that could be, you know, it's seen a bit more holistically that because of the railway, Dawlish has obviously come to town that it is. But, you know, surely the beach does serve a big function. And I appreciate it's got it's beautiful at low tide. It is a good point to be here. So whether the actual legacy and is something that might be factored into. And maybe it's not quite the right word, but it escapes me that something that's been inherited, as it were. And I suppose would simply, it is a nice safe place apart from the vast amount of ironwork, concrete, rebar sticking out of the sand. Is there a plan to get that tidied up? Because obviously as the beach moves by probably about a metre or two, depending on how severe the weather is, from one end to the other to the breakwaters, suddenly you can get exposed to a lot of jagged metal. Is that being factored in to get that all removed?
I'll answer your first question there, Ed, and I'll pass you to Philip Morton, the project manager, for the second question with regards to groins. So your first question about inheriting a railway that is susceptible to the weather, the sea, yes, absolutely. Brunel was an absolute genius. When he built the railway on the Great Western, we Network Rail have several areas where we're prone to flooding, significant flooding because of where Brunel built the railway. So around the Bristol area, Chipping Sodbury, there's lots of flooding historically. Heelan Bradnich, that kind of area, we always get flooding. Cowley Bridge Junction, just outside of Exeter, and of course along both estuaries and the coast. So you know, Brunel built the railway because it was the flattest, quickest route to build a railway, and unfortunately, that's where we are. So I think you know, the answer to your first question is yes, and you know, our responsibility as Network Rail is to ensure that this railway line continues. It's the only railway line that serves the rest of the peninsula, And you know, that's our role, to ensure that that railway is resilient, and this is the scheme that we developed. So if the second question with regards to drawings, Phil, can you come in on that, Philip Martin?
Yep, I can come in on that. So there will be a review of what needs to be cleared on the beach for our construction methodology. So there obviously will be some plant moving up and down the beach. We have mentioned so far that we will be using a jack-up barge within the area. So to be able to move that up and down the beach, there will be some clearance required. And that could also include any bits of rock, big rocks, or bits of concrete that are left over. There's a bit of old pipeline which is running down through the area, which has been battered and destroyed over the years in terms of when we've had some severe weather events. So things like that will need to be cleared just for our construction activities. But in terms of removing them completely in those groins, we're still, as part of the assessment we spoke about already in terms of reviewing the beach levels over a period of time, we will cut them down to a certain level, and obviously the ones that are closer to the current sea wall will need to come out to clear the space for our new wall alignment. So we'll take them down to the levels that we need to, but we're not intended to remove them completely at this stage. But if there's an ongoing assessment on that, and if they are proved to be doing nothing and causing more of a problem, then that will be assessed again at the time.
Okay.
Thank you, Phil.
Would there be a way of potentially having them marked, or just because obviously if you're there is a little tiny surf spot on the beach, you know, believe it or not, and the last thing you want to do is see someone kind of come in and hit a bit of metal, because it was deemed not worth removing.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Ed. And I think, you know, like was said earlier, we do want to leave, when we finish this second phase of the seawall at Dawlish, we do want to leave a legacy, and we are all proud, and we don't want to leave any potential hazards when we've completed the work. So a really good question, and that's, you know, I think that wraps it up really.
Okay, well, yeah, I appreciate it. I suppose, I think that whoever surveys it will enjoy watching that sand move back and forth by metres. It's just a shame that it can't be, you know, the soft landscaping incorporated into the hard landscaping as a set, rather than relying on just concrete to do all the work. But, you know, maybe it's the methodology of construction these days.
Okay, thank you, Ed.
Right, thank you, Ed. Thanks to everybody else as well. Thanks to everybody for taking the time to join this call, and for our speakers for their input. I hope you found this useful. Don't forget that this call has been recorded and will be available to listen again on our website within the next few days. If you have any further questions, there are lots of different ways that you can contact us. Firstly, via email, via southwestrrp@networkrail.co.uk. That's Southwest Romeo Papa at networkrail.co.uk. And we have regular updates on our Twitter and Facebook channels. The handle for that is @southwestrrp. And thank you again. Keep safe. And we hope to see you all again very soon. Good night.
Thank you, all speakers, and to everyone who joined the call. That concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Please continue to stay safe and have a nice evening.